Segue, the meaning of the word is actually the journey home. And I felt that coming back into this industry is coming home to my heritage and coming home to nail salons is how I look at nail polish and this entire industry.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Seek the Joy podcast. Happy Seek the Joy Tuesday. On the podcast this week is Audrey Hsu, the founder and CEO of Vaque. And Vaque is a nine-free, non-toxic, cruelty-free, vegan nail care company. And it's really inspired by Audrey's family's nail care heritage and industry experience. Audrey has really curated and created these really wonderful beauty products in a way that is more like a historian than a beauty brand founder. And at Vaque, they're not just serious about nail care. They're really the keepers of the artisan's legacy that came before them. And every facet of the Vaque brand and product serves as a palette to express this rich heritage. And their color collection and product feature are carefully curated to tell a story of places, cultures, and histories that inspire. I first connected with Audrey earlier this spring, and she is by far one of the kindest and most dedicated women that I've had the pleasure to meet since starting Seek the Joy podcast, and her commitment to changing the conversation in nail care while really remaining connected to her culture and honoring her heritage is really inspiring. And on today's episode, we chat all about how Audrey's exploration of that culture and heritage led her to creating Vaque. We also talk about the impact that growing up in the nail care industry has had on her and how an appreciation of her family's rich heritage has really impacted and molded her perspective and worldview when it comes to family and joy and everything in between. We also chat about the inspiration behind the name of her brand, how she's named each of her colors, her favorite polish at the moment, and we chat about the incredible collaborations that she's been part of this year. From J. Crew to Greta Gerwig, Audrey and Vaque are really just getting started. Okay, so I tried my very first Vaque polish a couple months back, and I went with this really pretty pink color called Princess, and I can't wait to expand my Vaque collection, and I can't wait for you guys to try Vaque too. And in celebration of this week's new episode, Audrey and Vaque have been so generous to offer Seek the Joy podcast listeners with a code for 15% off our purchase. So just head to vaque.com and enter the code SEEKTHEJOY, all one word, at checkout to receive 15% off. So you know, before we dive in to this week's episode, I have to share the iTunes review of the week. And this week it comes from Adulting is Hard. Okay. Honestly, adulting is hard. Whoever you are, I'm on the same page. And it says, so great. In such a negative world, it's so refreshing to hear some positivity. Keep it up, Sid. Okay, adulting is hard. Can you message me? Because I want to know who you are. But thank you so much for this kind review and for taking a couple of seconds to rate and review us on Apple iTunes. If you've been enjoying this podcast, if a topic or a guest has had an impact on your life, or you just want to support me and support the podcast, I would be so grateful if you would leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. If you do, just make sure to take a screenshot of your review and send it to Sydney@seekthejoypodcast.com, because I want to say thank you. I'll send you my guide for infusing more joy into your life, which is totally based on these conversations, as well as a couple of Seek the Joy podcast stickers. And as always, to learn more about today's episode, you can head over to the show notes section of our website, seekthejoypodcast.com/show-notes, and everything is right there. Guys, Audrey and Vaque are honestly just getting started, and I can't wait to see what she does next, and I'm so excited to share this episode with you. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Audrey.
Having me. This is so exciting. So I guess to start, people should know that I am Vietnamese American, And it almost feels like by default, being Vietnamese American, I grew up in the nail care industry just because it was so ingrained in my heritage. And so as such, every single nail salon that I would go to, it was a family member. My mom worked there, a family member worked there. Eventually, they went to own their own salon. And so even going away for college and coming home, I wouldn't come home and visit people in their homes. I would visit them at nail salons. And so Vegway, the meaning of the word is actually the journey home. And so I felt that coming back into this industry is coming home to my heritage, and coming home to nail salons is how I look at nail polish and this entire industry. And I guess that really sums up of who, it's really reflective of who I am. Mm-hmm. Someone who really cares about family and heritage and culture, and just giving back to that community.
Yeah. Wow. I love how you've weaved in your core values of family, heritage, and culture into Vegway and its significance. And so when did you get started developing your own business? Because, you know, I think it takes a lot of courage and enthusiasm and excitement, and that whole entrepreneurial journey can be so exciting, but also I think scary at times. And so at what point did you decide that this is something that I want to go off and do on my own too?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because I feel like being an entrepreneur and having the idea that being an entrepreneur is scary is kind of relative. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because I remember it was like, you know, high school career day and people, and you know, someone's like, oh, this is an entrepreneur. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really great. I want to be an entrepreneur one day, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was like, wait a minute, my parents are entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. You know, like at high school career day, I remember like when it was explained to me what an entrepreneur was, it sounded so great and so awesome that I want to be an entrepreneur. But then when I stepped back to look at the reality of who is actually an entrepreneur, and those were my parents, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't really want to be an entrepreneur the way that they are being an entrepreneur, because that's a lot of hard work. A lot of things that's like the non-cool stuff about being an entrepreneur, you know, like the stuff that they don't sell you at a high school career day. And so I think of my parents and all the people that I know who are entrepreneurs and who are also Vietnamese Americans. Vietnam, I feel like, is very entrepreneurial. But I feel like places like Vietnam and people who come out of, third world countries, or I don't know if it's just only third world countries, but I think that they are entrepreneurs by default, or not by default, but by they're forced to be entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. right? The country doesn't allow them an opportunity to do anything but become an entrepreneur. So, for example, I have a cousin who, grew up in Vietnam, went to school, and by the time he was going to school, this was in the 80s, 90s, mm-hmm. you know, and so he's a little bit older than me, so he graduated, and this is like all post-war. And so he went to school, got a degree in nursing, and then wanted to apply to a hospital to be a nurse. But in order to be a nurse at a hospital, you kind of have to bribe your way for an interview and then bribe your way into a job, which sounds very interesting, because then that means that you're not being hired by your merit. It's, mm-hmm. you're being hired through nepotism and just pure corruption. And so it really does take a toll on people who are young people who are inspired to go to school and do better and want to give back to their community, because they absolutely can't. The system won't allow them to do that. So in a lot of ways, people, I guess, are forced to start their own businesses, right? Because that's mm-hmm. something that they can control. They have some control over things that they create, things that they, you know, put together and the businesses that they create. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're trying to go through the system where you're you know, going through the education system and then going through, you know, the hiring process, you know, people being fair to you. And if that's not happening, then you're kind of forced to become an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And so in the sense of people from Vietnam, I feel like my parents, even so they would have grown up like, you know, like during the war. And so it would have been an even more difficult time where education wasn't even an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of things that they kind of grew up with, you know, like you're forced into being an entrepreneur, right? Coming to America, not knowing the language, you're forced into a business where you have to be an entrepreneur. So being an entrepreneur for me wasn't that bright and shiny, right? The idea of it at Career Day was still bright and shiny, but the reality was that it, you kind of have to do it because this, you don't have other choices. And so my process was that growing up, getting a job in corporate and having a salary that was set, I mean, that was like the American dream, right?
Mm-hmm,
that was like, that's amazing. you know, and I, you know, like not having to worry about where my next paycheck is going to come from as long as I had a job that was direct deposit into my bank account. And so to go from that and moving into an entrepreneur mindset, it was really, I think, when my kids were born and I ended up becoming a stay-at-home mom for about 5 years. So also, I was also a stay-at-home mom in Singapore because we became expats. And so I stayed at home in a foreign country. By the time we came back to the United States, I decided I'm going to go back to work. And then I knew that I didn't want to just leave my kids and, you know, not make the work that I do worth my time and fulfill. And it has to be fulfilling, right? It's not just about the money. And so I could go back to being a tech consultant, which I was prior to having kids. Before I went back to being a tech consultant, I decided I'm going to start. This is basically a good time to start a business. And, you know, I've played around with different ideas, you know, since high school career day, right? I mean, I've looked at so many different opportunities and, you know, things that I could have made, like maybe I should make an app when everyone was making apps, you know, like I just a whole bunch of things. But really when it came down to having kids, your life, I think, is shifted and your thinking is shifted. And so my thinking shifted into not only is it that I wanted to build a business for myself, you know, and see what I'm made of, right? I mean, there's that challenge. But there's also, as the story of my family being part of this nail care industry for decades and being part of a heritage that has transformed the landscape of nail care because over 50% of nail professionals are of Vietnamese descent. In America, I don't know what the percentage is, you know, outside of America, but within the United States, it's over 50%. And so that heritage to me is something that I was thinking, how do I capture that for my own kids, right? So it's almost like creating, here's, you know, like mom's or grandma's, you know, favorite egg roll recipe or something. Do you know what I mean? Like this is a grandma's like egg roll recipe, but instead of giving you that, I'm going to give you like, this is what I think this legacy looks like. And this is what I'm packaged, you know, I'm just wrapping it all up as this brand and as this business so that one day I feel like my daughter, if she can understand what this means, you know, culturally, because although I'm Vietnamese and I speak Vietnamese, my husband is Chinese and we, both of us have, you know, we're born and raised in America and we speak English at home. So my kids are, you know, they're not learning they're not learning a second language at home. They speak English. And so I feel like everything that like I have to all of a sudden celebrate every single holiday so that I can, you know, push culture onto them, right? Mm-hmm. Like this is how we celebrate Chinese New Year, or this is how we celebrate, you know, the Moon Festival, and you know, like, and normally I don't celebrate these holidays, right? But I've been more mindful of celebrating it because of my kids, and so because of my kids and this heritage that I feel like I have to stay for them.
Yeah,
that's kind of where Bakeway like kind of was born, because like I said, I've had like an entire lifetime of nail industry experience where I could have done this at any point in my life, right? But
right.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel like it was I needed to. And then but having kids and thinking about what you want for them and what you want them to see, you know, in their future and like what their heritage mm-hmm. and everything means. I mean, that a lot of that like comes back to why I started this.
Yeah. Oh, Audrey, I love this. And the path that you've chosen to follow to really honor your family and your heritage and really preserve and share this with your kids. And you've totally captured that legacy and your passion and your family's heritage into the bottles and the packaging and the messaging that you're putting out there. And I love how you likened it to passing down a family recipe or different elements of culture. And I think it's a really interesting topic and something that hasn't been discussed on this podcast yet, because, you know, this is something that I can totally relate to also. So going back probably like two or three generations, my family is from parts of Hungary and Russia, and they all came over and had difficulties with their journeys really mm-hmm. coming to America and then being immersed in the greater American culture while still trying to hold on to their own individual culture and heritage. And as a family, we try to hold on to as many of our Jewish traditions and culture, you know, as we can. And it's been a little bit of a struggle and something that we've tried to, I guess, reckon with, which is how do you stay true to your family history and your heritage and want to celebrate that and remind yourselves of that and still be part of a greater culture. And so it's so wonderful to hear how that's what's, you know, really in part motivated you or pushed you to fulfill your passions for your family and your heritage and your culture, and also a real passion for caring about people and putting products out there that are non-toxic and good for you and safe. And so it's really wonderful to hear how you've married the two. And I just so enjoyed hearing about the history behind the brand that you created. And so, you know, I imagine it wasn't necessarily an easy process getting to this point.
Maybe your words are just way too kind, Sydney. I mean, but I think what's interesting about history, too, is that, you know, it's history is being created now, you know? I mean, to me, like, my mom got her license by the time I was in kindergarten, right? So I was like 5 years old. And so I can't mm-hmm. remember before then when she wasn't doing nails. You know what I mean? Like, I yeah. always knew like a Vietnamese person doing nails, and they were always related mm-hmm. to me somehow, you know? So I have always known this part of it, right? And they, and of course, like that generation, that's not the heritage and the culture that they try to, you know, hold on to for me, right? They try to hold on to something right. that was like actually from Vietnam, right? But then I
exactly,
see
yeah.
that history, and we are part of our heritage and our culture in our present day life, right? Mm-hmm. So as of today, however the world is changing, I mean, history is currently being made right now. So I mean, I just basically put my foot down and said that this nail care culture is a heritage that I am a part of. Because like I said, like going into a nail salon is like going home, right? People there treat me like family. Most of the time they are my family. But, you know, even when I'm in Seattle and I don't have family here, they treat me like family. And it could be, and they could even be like a non-Vietnamese nail salon. And or not, you know, just professional nail artists of any background. I feel like they're like a sister, you know, or like a brother to me, right? Because mm-hmm. I grew up in that space.
Yeah, and I love what you just said about history and how history is being created right now. And so I think part of that is really learning to balance, you know, the history of generations ago with the history we're creating, you know, in this moment. Because for everyone that is going out on their own and creating something that they're excited and passionate mm-hmm. about, they're really playing a strong and instrumental role in creating the history that they really want to be part of. And so I would love to talk to you a little bit about that and about creating Vaequay. And so what has your creative process been like? You talked a little bit about where the name comes from, but how have you been able to create your colors and the names of those colors and at the same time really step out into the space with an emphasis on creating non-toxic products?
I mean, I started this whole nail care business, with the idea of I needed to create for, for my family, right? So all the people that I know, all the people who I know could use it. And that meant all of the moms that I've met, right? All the pregnant moms that I've met, who have told me that they didn't feel comfortable going to a nail salon because of the toxins in most salons. And so that was a concern that I've heard from pregnant mothers that I've, had conversations with. And then, just to think like, okay, if I was going to create a formula, I want a parent to feel like it's safe enough to use on their own child. And so I felt like it was safe enough for me to use on my daughter when she was 2 years old. So I went through, the formula. I combed through all of the formula, the ingredients in the formulation, and it's just a lot of work. You don't know. I didn't know. I'm not a chemist, right? So, but I know to reach out to people who are and look for industry experts, and there's the internet these days, right? So then you can almost find anything on the internet. It takes a lot of time and energy to look up, ingredients and stuff to make sure that, everything is good and safe. But that's all time and energy that I felt was important to do in order to ensure that all of that is, okay for pregnant mothers and little girls. And then on the vegan side, my parents are actually vegan themselves. And so I felt like for them to work at salons, they really shouldn't use products that, have shellac, which is, which is like a an animal byproduct. It's a resin from a bug, in case people are wondering what shellac was. And then, just other ingredients that could be in nail polish product that's like the opposite of what they stand for, right? So I felt like that was my obligation, just to my parents, but for other people too. And and I don't want people who choose to be vegan to not want to go get their nails done anywhere because of the product. You should be able to get your nails done simply because you want to, and then it's not something you need to think about, right? I wasn't doing it to be part of some clean beauty movement, which we're seeing now. I just did it because those were my values, that I care about. Like, right. I care about all those mothers and the vegan community, So, it's just one of those things where I feel like if you're going to make a cupcake and you don't add eggs and you don't add milk, then, the cupcake is kind of funny. But for nail polish, if you don't add it, it's okay. It's good.
Yeah. Oh, I love this analogy, and it's so perfect. And I just love how you followed your passions and your values. And, even though you didn't intend to be part of this clean beauty movement, you are absolutely part of it, and you are setting the tone and the stage for higher and cleaner standards. And so, so then how have you been able to come up with the names of the colors?
So the name of the color, I think a lot of nail polish that you see, you pick it up and it's very witty, and it's, there's like puns and stuff. That's just a typical way of naming a nail polish. And, I don't think I'm necessarily a funny person, so I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to try to be somebody that I'm not. And so what I feel like I kind of am is I'm a traveler. I love traveling. I love, going to places where, I could be looking at a building, but I could be looking at any building, right? But what's interesting about one building versus another building is knowing the history and the art and the reason why this one particular building has so much historical value. But knowing why it is what I think it makes that particular piece interesting and inspiring. So to take that concept into a nail polish collection, right? The very first collection, I felt strongly that I needed it to represent how this brand started from, you know, like just why is it that there are so many Vietnamese people in nail care, right? And the reason is that I feel like it started with the entire culture of what Vietnam was to me, you know, like, so in my head, I think of it as being very French influence, very Chinese influence. All of those collectively makes Vietnam like what it is. And also like American influences. The very first collection was named after something very Vietnam pre-75, I guess, would be, or like pre-77. Mm-hmm. I think everything but one, maybe, is French. It's French translated, but every one of those names ties back to something that was happening at that time. So, for instance, Follies, I think that's the only one I could think of that does not have a French translation. But Follies is a, you know, hot pink color because at the time, during the war, there is something called 5 o'clock at the Follies at the Rex Hotel. The Rex Hotel is a famous hotel in Saigon. And Follies is, or like 5 o'clock at the Follies was this time period where the military would give their press briefing. Mm-hmm. And so all the press would go to the hotel and then the military would, you know, would do, you know, just give them the news of the day. Mm-hmm. And because the Rex Hotel is significant to like Saigon and Ho Chi Minh City, then I felt like something that's part of that that hotel should be included. And that I felt like because it was included at that time, you know, that time period.
Yeah.
Another one of my favorites is, I felt like I couldn't create the collection without it. It's Lumiere, which basically was named after the Ile de Lumiere. It's a French hospital boat. This is post-war. Vietnam has, you know, people have been fleeing the country, you know, as refugees. And there was this, you know, Vietnamese refugee crisis in the South China Sea. The person who I think started Doctors Without Borders, and they basically found this ship that called the Ile de Lumiere, and they turned, either it was already a hospital boat or they turned it into a hospital boat. Mm-hmm. So then they put doctors into the South China Sea, rescuing Vietnamese refugees, providing, you know, healthcare.
Wow.
And so they did this. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, right? So, I mean, yeah. I just felt like I couldn't have created a collection without including them,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course. And I love how all of the colors are tied to this history and this heritage, and it absolutely gives it, you know, a deeper meaning. Mm-hmm. So then what is your favorite polish right now? Because I know you have more than one collection. So what is your favorite polish at the moment?
Oh, at the moment? I don't know. At the moment, I think it's the Mauve Blush. Mm. So Mauve Blush is a newer one. So the first one, the first collection, like I said, that was very tied into culture because that was like the very first thing. And, you know, and I felt like this is where it all started.
Right.
Like that history is what started this heritage, this nail care heritage for me. And so later on, I mean, the collections are more, you know, through other places in the world, right? So like San Francisco has, you know, has one, and like Seattle and our coffee culture has, you know, another collection, right? But it's still deep and meaningful to me. It's just not as historically, you know, meaningful as as the other, right? But currently Mauve Blush is my absolute favorite right now, just because it's this cute, you know, millennial like pink blush color.
Yeah.
But also it's part of the J. Crew collection that just launched in March. And so that was kind of amazing.
We need to talk about this incredible collaboration with J. Crew, and then what happened with Greta Gerwig at the Oscars. I mean, you've really had some exciting things happen to you, you know, since the start of the year.
So I mean, it really started, I think, towards the end of last year. The beginning of last year, it felt like the universe was totally against me, right? Like, I couldn't get anything done, right? Like, packaging was a disaster. Everything I did, everything I touched seemed like it was a nightmare. And then, of course, summer came along, and I had other, you know, I just had more time. I had more focus. I had more resources. And so I started going out, you know, doing pop-ups and talking to people, walking into stores and talking to, telling my story, you know, where people didn't know about, you know, the backstory of the Premier Collection originally. And so just mm-hmm. getting out and telling people what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. I mean, I think people really
connected with it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like, honestly, that's all I did, you know, was I just went out and I created my story. I created my brand, but I didn't necessarily have the time to go and tell it and be like really talk, mm-hmm. you know, like use words and, you know, have the words leave my mouth, you know, to other people, because people would have to read it, and then reading it, I didn't write it properly. And so anyway, it was just a lot of communication wasn't necessarily projected like online and on screen and on paper. And so by getting out in like a pop-up and talking to people, people really connected. And I connected with the Madewell store here in Seattle to do a pop-up. And so the pop-up was like on a Friday. It was Friday morning of all times, right? It was Friday morning of all times. And I mean, the people who were coming in, I think, were like students and moms. And so I told my story. I connected with some people. The store manager at Madewell actually put my name forward and the brand forward to their corporate buying office.
Oh, wow.
Because J. Crew at the time was curating for beauty products because they rolled out beauty boxes into their stores in January. And so I kind of knew that something was going on, you know, with that. But, you know, the chance, I just think like the chances of them like picking a brand new, you know, company out of Seattle.
Yeah.
At the time, I think, I mean, honestly, at the time I did the Madewell pop-up, I mean, I still don't have a whole bunch of following on Instagram. But at the time, I think I had like 300 max, like 200 maybe,
mm-hmm.
people following
yeah.
me in October. And so I just, you know, like, I don't think anything of it, right? That, okay, yeah, you're going to like push my name forward, but you're going to see I have like 200 people following me on Instagram. So,
right.
Maybe,
I get it. Yeah.
So maybe not. But what's really interesting is that other buyers have told me that they actually don't look at those numbers. So, and that was really like a huge confidence booster, you know, because that's always like, mm-hmm. oh, I have to be super popular, you know, for someone, for like a buyer to
yeah.
want me. But that's actually not what they look at. They look at whether or not they think that you are, that your product fits with their store and if it's like sellable, right? Because they are the experts in selling and merchandising.
Right.
And so if they believe that they can sell it, then that's all they need to know. Like they don't really
mm-hmm.
look so much at your social media following, because they know that like for indie beauty and for, you know, new brands, it's not really, you know, it's not really a necessity, right?
Right.
So that was like eye-opening, because that was also like very like low confidence, you know, because every time you look at your social media feeds, like, oh, nobody likes me. Nobody wants to be my friend.
Yeah. I mean, it can really make you feel bad about yourself or make you believe that, you know, you don't have a chance to do certain things. But I love
mm-hmm.
that you just shared that, you know, they don't necessarily look at the social
mm-hmm.
media following, because I think so many of us, you know, that are just starting out, and me included, I think we can feel intimidated or that maybe,
mm-hmm.
you know, someone won't give us a chance because we don't
yeah.
have tens of thousands of followers. And so I'm just really glad that you shared that, because I think people need
yeah,
to hear
so,
it.
So I mean, I just really feel like I got really lucky, you know, that they put my brand forward at the right place and at the right time. And so corporate J. Crew, you know, emailed me, I had a call, and the next thing I know, I, you know, like there's a PO that's open and now I have to fill it. And so
yeah.
and I think that the minute that I was able to get my foot in the door with that first email when they reached out, I feel like that's when all of my corporate, you know, experience as a tech consultant kicked in, right? Then I would have to know, like, what is my project timelines, you know, like all the things that that I need to know and they need to know as well, right? And so, and then just balancing that relationship between, you know, keeping them happy and keeping them, you know, high level confidence, you know, that, okay, I'm small and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to deliver on this.
Yeah.
But then it was just this amazing opportunity. And yeah, so I knew that, like, I had to do whatever it took to make it happen. But yeah, that was super exciting, super stressful, but, you know, like, in the most, like, the best, like, adrenaline rush, like, ever, you know?
Yeah.
It's just super amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I can honestly only imagine, I mean, what an amazing opportunity and experience. And then, okay, so then what was it like to see Greta Gerwig wear your polish at the Oscars? Because I know it was a whole process of sending your polish to different nail technicians and artists for the Oscars. So then once you saw that she was actually wearing Vaequay, I mean, what was that experience like? How did you feel in that moment?
I don't know. I mean, it was very, I was very, like, numb, you know, like, I just thought, like, I mean, like, I, so before she, like, was on the red carpet, the manicurist actually sent me a photo, like, as she's wearing it, you know, and I was just like, oh my God, like, this is, this is crazy, right?
Like, so surreal, I'm sure.
It's absolutely surreal. But so then I just felt like, I felt like I was, like, right there, you know. I was not the manicurist who who did her nails, right? But I felt like I was right there, you know, with the colors and, you know, and I just felt like all the people who were involved in creating the product, getting it fulfilled, you know, like, just everybody, like, of my entire lifetime that, like, you know, made Vaequay possible. I mean, we were just, like, sitting right there. And so I was really numb, you know, thinking about that. Like, I don't think anyone else, you know, who helped me with Vaequay, like, you know, thought that, you know, but I just think this is for me because it's an entire lifetime of helping women, like, pick colors from the shelf and you know, and just like, oh, we ran out of this color, so what should we do? And then, like, you know, come up with, like, creative things, you know, just an entire lifetime of those experiences and that culture and that tribe to me is just all wrapped up in, like, this little moment that was, like, I'm so numb that, like, I can't believe she's, because it was really, I was really nervous because, like, okay, I give you a nail polish, you're going to see her, but, you know, like, what if, you know, the stylist or, like, Greta or whoever, like, they, like, I don't have enough range of colors, right, that they want to choose from, and they're not going to use, you know, like, I don't have the right colors, and so they're going to have to go use another color, you know, from another brand.
Right.
So, so that always happened, right? And when it didn't happen and they used Vaequay, it was just like, oh, this is, you know, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, I was nervous about her wearing it and then that she might not wear it. But then when she wore it, then I got nervous again. You know, like, I was numb, but then I was numb in a good way and I was nervous and I was nervous in a good way, right? Because then it was like, oh, what does this mean?
Yeah. Yeah, because then it's real, right? It's real and it's out there and people are now exposed to Vaequay and your story. And I can imagine that was probably part of the trepidation and the fear. Yes. But how cool, though. And what an exciting end of 2017 and beginning of 2018 that you've really been having.
Thank you. Started when my daughter was, like, just turned one and now she's just about to turn four. So it's... I don't know.
So she's growing up with it.
Yeah. And she's, and it's funny because then she's like, she wants to help mommy with nail polish. You know, she wants to put the little ball in, like, the bottle.
Oh, I love this. So you're really doing, you know, exactly what you set out to do, which is to have this be about family and heritage and culture and passing it down.
If my kids, you know, never work at Vaequay, you know, in their future, I mean, I don't know how I would feel about that. but more importantly, like, I feel like I would have captured what this heritage means to me that I can give to them, right? And so just having them know that there was this hospital boat that existed, you know, and did this amazing thing, right? I mean, that that's everything, right? Like that.
Totally.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I love this. I love this. So then what are some things that you do in your life to bring you joy, or how do you infuse joy into your day-to-day life?
I do have a lot of joy in my life. And I think it's really, you know, appreciating what you have, right? Just like I mentioned about like old buildings and when you travel, you can't enjoy your travel if you don't know what to appreciate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So in your everyday life, you have to know what is worth appreciating, right? So if it's, you know, oh, my kid ran over and, you know, woke me up really early, you know, this morning, you know, I try not to bicker about, you know, oh, it's like not even 7 or not even like, you know, 6 yet and you're awake, but it's really that, oh, you're awake, but you're cuddling with me, you know, and this is like the best thing. So the kids are healthy and they're happy, right? I mean, that's all, and they're safe. And so it's like, do I need anything else? Not really, right? I don't really look for, there's not a whole lot that I'm looking for, you know? I'm looking to business that I want to create and kind of see take off and take flight, you know, kind of thing. But even if that like disappears tomorrow, I mean, it would be heartbreaking, but it's not the end of the world. Do you know what I mean?
Because
my family is just so much more important, right? And then to incorporate the joy in my life, right? It's making time for them, right? So I balance what I do by picking up my kids from school, by talking to them in the car, and by focusing on them when, you know, when it matters, right? And then when it's time for them to go play, then they go play and I go do work, right? But we share things together. We share an experience together. We share a life together. And that goes the same with, like, my husband and with friends, you know? So even with friends, I do try to book time to see friends that I haven't seen in a long time, especially now that everyone has children of their own and, you know, a very busy work schedule. Yeah, just making time for people who matter in your life, I think, is what's really important. And if you can just take the time to do that and be mindful of that, I feel like that's true joy, right? Because I don't feel like I have to seek. I don't have to look for it. It's already incorporated in my life. And so I'm a pretty happy person.
Yeah, definitely. And I love your perspective. So I have to ask you the question that I ask everyone that comes on Seek the Joy podcast, which is, what would you say is your biggest dream?
Honestly, I feel like I said, like to appreciate and to have joy. Like I really appreciate and feel like I have everything I need right now. But I don't know, to dream of what Fekwe, I guess, would be like, you know, in the future. I mean, I would love to see Fekwe like be showcased more so as like a museum look, that you look at it through the lens of this historical perspective versus you know, this product and this brand, you know, like I like to see that, but I don't know if that would be like the greatest, biggest goal, right? Again, because I feel like the biggest goal for me as a person would be like just to make sure my kids, you know, grow old, right?
So
there's like, there's a business goal and then there's like the person goal, right? And the person goal is that if I can grow old with my husband, and we can raise our kids to be responsible and happy people. Is there anything else?
No, I think that's beautiful. I love that. And you know, what's so wonderful about dreams is that they can shift and grow and change over time. And Audrey, I just have loved having this conversation with you. And it has been so wonderful to learn about the connection between history and culture and the meaning infused into your company. So where can everyone find Fekwe and get more involved?
You can find Fekwe online at Fekwe.com. You could go to J.Crew and get the spring version of, by the way, the J.Crew colors match their bras and underwears that they just launched. So you could get matching nail polish and matching bras and panties at J.Crew.
I love this.
And then there's just, you know, other salons and small boutiques, you know, around Seattle. There's some in California. There's just, you know, we're expanding. So yeah.
Perfect. And I'll include everything in the show notes for today's episode so that everyone can find you and find Vaequay. And thank you so much again, Audrey. This was great.
Thank you so much, Brittany.